Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals to do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. This week, we spoke with all three of Cure's 2019 Ovarian Cancer Heroes, who were celebrated 2 weeks ago in Hawaii at the Society of Gynecologic Oncology's annual meeting. First, we honored Ryan Mitztifer-Walton, a 16-year-old sophomore who has been an advocate for ovarian cancer since birth. Ryan is an active volunteer for the National Ovarian Cancer Coalition and participates in runs and walks to break the silence on ovarian cancer. His reason for his work is to ensure that no child loses their mother to cancer.
Your mother was diagnosed with ovarian cancer at the time that she found out she was pregnant with you.
Yes.
How did that shape your path as you grew up?
Well, as I was growing up, my mom took me to all of her events, run walks. So I've just kind of been advocating my entire life. So it's something that, I don't want to say came naturally, but something that I grew up doing, and I love what I do.
Great. So now, as you got older and as you came into your own, how did your mother's work as a volunteer and advocate impact your work and influence your work as an advocate?
Well, my mom impacted me because as I grew up, she was telling her story, and it puts everything into perspective, and things that I take for granted. And just recently, I decided that I should start sharing our story. My mom is the main person who has shaped me to be the person I am today.
Now, what was it like? I heard you were the opening speaker for the NRCC National Conference in New York. What was that like?
To open the national conference was a very big honor, and it was kind of what shot off my public speaking, and I had so much fun. I mean, the doctors were quoting things that I said or my hashtags because I share from a teen's perspective. So I thought might as well put in some hashtags. And it was just, the people were so nice. It was a lovely community. I just loved it.
Oh, that's great. So now, what do you enjoy most about volunteering with the NOCC?
I love volunteering for NOCC because I can see the impact it can have on others. And my big thing is I want other teens to have their moms just like I have mine. So when I get to go there and I see these women that are either fighting the disease or that have loved ones or those who are just remembering those who have passed, I like to be there because I want to help in any way I can.
That's great. So what would you say to others if they're interested in becoming an advocate like you for people with ovarian cancer but don't know where to start? What piece of advice would you give them?
Like if they want to advocate?
Yeah.
It would be find what you're passionate about within like advocating, and don't be afraid to do things, because I was I was stressed to go up on stage at the national conference, but at the end, it really opens doors for you. I mean, it was just find something you love and go for it. I go for my three statements. Include us. You are not protecting us by your silence. If parents are trying to hide that they have this disease, it doesn't help us. We know when something is wrong. Tell us. Tell us your fears and let us know how we can help. The next one is stay connected. I always say connection is key. My mom ingrained that into me. Connection is key. So don't be afraid to express it to others. Don't try to hide it. And the third one was, never say I can't. It's hashtag never say I can't. In my house, if you ever say I can't, it's worse than the cancer card. It's the scar. My mom, shirt up, scar exposed, the words that I ever say, I can't have a baby and ovarian cancer pour from her mouth. In my house, I know you can, or you will die trying.
That's great. Now, last question. What was it like to get that phone call telling you that you were chosen as an ovarian cancer hero?
Well, of course, I didn't get the phone call. My mother did. And I kind of heard after I got home from school and baseball practice. And I already knew something was up because all my parents were dressed nicely. And I'm not saying that's not usual, but it was kind of throwing me off. And I knew something was up, and my mom just, they were sitting around our dinner table, and they just said, well, you're my hero. And I didn't know how to control myself. I was so honored. I never thought it, the nomination is what meant the most to me. I love what I do, and I don't do it for awards. I do it because I love it. And when I realized someone nominated me and saw what I did and thought that was award worthy, I got goosebumps. I loved it. And hearing that it even won with the two other doctors, I believe, I mean, it's something I won't ever be able to forget. I'm honored.
Next, we honored Paula Anastasia, a gynecologic oncology clinical nurse specialist from the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. Paula's career spans more than 35 years, 25 of which have been served in gynecologic oncology.
As an oncology nurse, what are some of the biggest challenges that you see on a day-to-day basis for patients with ovarian cancer?
Some of the challenges I see for my patients with ovarian cancer is, number one, many patients that are diagnosed with cancer is like, how did I get this? So the education, the awareness, what could I have done to prevent this? What did I do wrong? And of course, they did nothing wrong. I think in the new healthcare era, there's so much information on the internet, and then their friends who are not healthcare professionals are saying, oh, you should do this, this, and this. And then there's a lot of myths out there. But also with the new research that is still not ready for prime time, for instance, immunotherapy patients are like, oh, I want immunotherapy, but it's not FDA approved and it's not quite ready, but we have all these other treatments. So backing up to that statement, I think education and awareness of how to diagnose ovarian cancer at an early time so that it is more curable as opposed to somebody diagnosed at stage 3 and 4. The new treatments that are out there and the cost. And so now the new term, of course, is financial toxicity. So just because it might be FDA approved, and especially some of these oral medications, patients who have Medicare may not be able to afford oral medications because it falls under a different prescription plan. So there's a lot of challenges. And I think just with overwhelming information, trying to have time with patients, give them accurate information, but we also have to treat the whole patient, not just the physical, but the emotional. And ovarian cancer, unfortunately, is a chronic disease. So these ladies are going to be diagnosed, get into remission, yay. But then unfortunately, most of these patients will recur, and then it repeats. And so the vulnerability and kind of like, for lack of a better term, this post-traumatic stress feeling of just always waiting, even if they're in remission and feeling good, just waiting when and if it's going to recur again. So there's the emotional and the physical of caring for these incredible, courageous ladies.
So in your essay, your nominator, Nancy Jo, she described you as her tear catcher, how you cared for her through her journey with ovarian and breast cancer. What drives you every day to do the work that you do to touch the lives of all those patients and families that you work with?
I think what drives me is the incredible courageousness of these ladies. And I think about my life and how quote unquote easy it is. And you know, we can all have stressors in our day and there can be just awful things. But when I think of, but I'm not dealing with cancer, I'm not dealing with side effects, I'm not dealing with having to make a choice between affording medication and keeping my job and taking my children to work, but yet I have to get to the infusion center and who's going to do that. So my patients really ground me and humble me, and I'm not a Pollyanna, so it's like, oh, everything's wonderful. But they really remind me that every day is a gift. And I think back when my mother died, not of ovarian cancer, but she died of ovarian cancer. I'm sorry. When my mother passed away, not of ovarian cancer, but of a different cancer, I was 28. And that was the first significant loss that I had in my life. And taking care of women with cancer, so many of these children And even adult children, they lose their moms way too soon. I mean, other cancers as well, but I've just bonded to women and understanding what it's like to lose a mother. But I also realize that no matter how old your mom is and how old these people are, if they lose their mom at 80, it's still painful and the grief. So I can empathize. Obviously, every loss is different, but they all just touch me in such a way. And I just think of all the challenges that they have to go through. And, you know, sometimes, as I mentioned, I give my patients my cell phone, and I really don't mind at all. And they'll call me on the weekends and say, oh, I hate to bother you, but I'm having a really bad day. And it's like, I would much rather you call me than to suffer for something that we could fix so quickly. I also have patients that are just having really bad days, and the spouses will call me and they say, hey, can you give a cheerleader call to, you know, to my patient? And it's like, of course. And so I remind patients that I'm not going to be able to fix something, but sometimes just to listen. And I've been doing this for 30 years, and I still don't know what it's like to have ovarian cancer and the side effects and what they deal with, but I can empathize. And so sometimes just to listen and to validate that, yeah, today is not a good day, but let's try this, this, and this and see if we can make it a little bit better, because I want tomorrow to be a better day so that you want to wake up in the morning. You're going through this treatment because you want to live. But if you're in bed and sick and feeling horrible, what's the point of that? So they really inspire me. I use this cliche a lot, and I say my patients really inspire me to aspire. And my sweet husband, I think that he often feels like second fiddle, because I come home from a long day and then I'm still on the phone with the patient, or on the weekend I'm talking to a patient. And I told him, I said, sweetheart, I said, when you're diagnosed with ovarian cancer, I promise you will be my priority, and I too will give you excellent care. So he gets it. But yeah, these patients are just amazing.
So now, what was it like when you got the phone call telling you that you were chosen to be an ovarian cancer hero?
Oh my gosh. For sounding like a cliche, it was so humbling. And there are so many nurses that are so much more extraordinary than I. And I know that in my little population that I make a difference in their lives. I really know that. But I don't do like these magnificent things that other people are doing, and doing missions and, you know, changing the world. So I was just so humbled and honored. And the person that nominated me happened to be my mentor in graduate school. And then 10 years ago, she was diagnosed with ovarian cancer and breast cancer at the same time. And it's so different to be a patient than it is to be a teacher. And she has just been, continued to be my inspiration and keeping me humble, and knowing, you know, the knowledge and the ability to care for other people. I really learned that from her and the fabulous physician I work with, Dr. Beth Carlin. But when Nancy Jo nominated me, I was walled up with tears. I couldn't believe it. And it's like, no, we should be nominating you. You're the cancer survivor. All I did was help, you know, treat some of your side effects. So it is, it's very touching and an honor to be nominated, but it's even like incredible to have been selected. So I thank everybody for that.
So now, is there a particular message you would like to share with women who may be newly diagnosed with ovarian cancer?
Women that are newly diagnosed with cancer, there is so much fear. And at the same time, there's so much hope. And I started 30 years ago, and I don't know whether it's proper to say this, but 30 years ago, my ladies lived 2 years. Now my ladies are living 10 years and longer. And it's just amazing the progress that has occurred. And these ladies have purposeful lives. I mean, they wow me. I mean, they're working full time for those that want to and choose to. They are traveling. They are raising money. They're raising children. They're raising grandkids. They're taking care of their ill parents. They are just living and doing so many things in spite of having a diagnosis of ovarian cancer in spite of having to go through surgery and chemotherapy and another chemotherapy. And I try to emphasize to my ladies that there's always hope. There's always hope for another treatment. And if we can keep you alive for the next 5 years, in the next 5 years, there's going to be something else. Well, we used to say that all the time. Well, now it's like in the next month, in the next year, because there's so much coming down the pipeline that's just fabulous. And I think the other important thing is clinical trials. I mean, we would not have gotten this far with women living so long with the diagnosis of advanced ovarian cancer if it wasn't for these courageous ladies entering clinical trials to give us these answers. So we have to keep doing more of that. But I think that just knowing that there's hope, finding the right physician, it needs to be a GYN oncologist to do the surgery, and you need to have a team. I mean, nobody does this alone. And Dr. Beth Carlin, she has passion, and the two of us feed off on each other because we really, really care about these ladies. And we tell them, we're going to be with you from start to finish, shoulder to shoulder. And whatever we can do to make your day better, it's going to make our day better.
Lastly, we honored Dr. Shannon Weston, who serves as the Director of Early Drug Development and Phase 1 Trials in her department at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, and is a co-director of the Ovarian Cancer Moonshot.
So for you, cancer's personal. Having lost your mother to cancer when you were 17, you know about the fear and the worry that comes with a cancer diagnosis. How has that shaped your professional career?
So having lost my mother at the age of 17 to lung cancer, I know what families and patients are going through when they have a cancer diagnosis and the fear that comes when you first hear that word. And so it has definitely shaped the way I treat my patients. It's shaped my bedside manner and the way that I approach giving care and helping patients make decisions. I think my dad and I, when she was sick, we saw a lot of different bedside manners. We saw some that were amazing and some that were terrifying. And so I learned from watching that and really used that to shape how I take care of my patients every day.
So what personal rewards come from being so integral in the ovarian cancer population?
So I think that I find there's many things that reward me personally in taking care of patients with ovarian cancer. I always enjoyed the personal connection with patients and really the honor and the opportunity to care for women from throughout their entire cancer continuum, from the time they're diagnosed until the time when we transition to no further therapy. That's an honor to me, and getting to know the patient and her family, all of her loved ones, it's special to me, and it helps me come to work every day. And then of course I'm always honored when we do the right thing, when we have a success. I can't always take personal responsibility for that or take credit for that, but I'm always thrilled when we do have that success where we get somebody to 5 or 6 years with no evidence of disease and you're just hugging and cheering and it's graduation day, and I love those times. And so I think that I'm very fortunate. But then on the other side of the coin, if we do get to the point where there are no further options, I feel incredibly honored to be able to help patients and their families transition at that time and be comfortable that they did everything that they could and feel content with what's coming next. I think that not many people get to have those kind of conversations. I had that conversation from the patient side when my mom was so ill, and it didn't go well. And so I hope that one of the things that I can do is provide that comfort and that confidence that everything was done that could be done, and now there should be no regrets. And so I think, you know, for me, those are the things that get me to work every day, that get me up in the morning.
So what do you enjoy or appreciate most about working with your oncology patients?
You know, the oncology patients are just incredible. And so there are so many things that I enjoy about working with them. Their fighting spirit, their strength, their care. But even, I think that the craziest thing to me is that you'll have a patient that's ill. They're in the hospital, for example, and they're like, "How do you feel today, Dr. Weston? Are you doing okay? How are your kids?" You know, just that personal connection and that just that giving spirit. I mean, I think that it's just an amazing honor to be able to work with them every day. I think that that, you know, all cancer patients are incredibly special, and that we as oncologists are just incredibly fortunate to be able to care for them.
If you had one takeaway message for those that are touched by ovarian cancer mm-hmm. anyway, what would it be?
I think my one key message for those women affected by ovarian cancer and their families and friends and loved ones is they're not alone, that we're all in this together, that there are, you know, I'm just one researcher among many amazing, smart, brilliant people that are all working towards the goal of a cure for this disease. And so they should keep their hope alive and stay as positive as they can and be thankful and be ready to be part of our community.
So lastly, what does it mean for you to be called an ovarian cancer hero and to be here tonight to receive this award?
Frankly, I was so touched to be considered as an ovarian cancer hero. I'm incredibly honored, and you can see I'm getting a little choked up. I have so many amazing mentors and colleagues that are doing the work and making incredible strides every day. So for me to be honored in this way was absolutely incredible and surprising and lovely. And, you know, I think we work really hard and sometimes things don't go well. And so it's really nice to get a little pat on the back and say, you know what, you're doing a really great job. So I'm very thankful for this award.
Tune in next week when we speak with Heather Tolly Bauer, a mother, comedian, and colon cancer survivor who found healing through humor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcast. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.